The table was set. Ruby began the process of learning formally the art and craft of using her innate musical gifts. She graduated in 3 years with a Bachelor of Science degree in education with a major in music, finishing at the head of her class in the Department of Music. Ruby was now a college graduate. During the summer of 1930, she gave highly successful concerts at Methodist camps and conferences in Wisconsin and New York before returning to Mississippi, where she performed 6 more times. Rust College headmistress Emma Becker was thrilled to see Ruby return to teach, but Ruby's mother Emma had said that Mississippi was too small for Ruby, that Ruby had earned the right to share her talent with the world. Those words would soon prove prophetic. While Ruby was giving concerts after her graduation, Dr. McCracken was still working hard on her behalf. Barely a week after Ruby graduated, Dr. McCracken was in Chicago for an educational conference, also attended by Edwin Embry of the Julius Rosenwald Fund. David Weaver.
The Julius Rosenwald Fund, if anyone knows anything at all about the history of the arts for Black Americans, the Rosenwald Fund in the 20s, 30s, and 40s was an important organization which gave scholarships and fellowships to many gifted Black performers to do advanced studies. They funded Marian Anderson for her first trip to Europe, which led to, of course, to her great career that she had there and her discovery at the Salzburg Festival in 1935 by Toscanini. Ruby was given a scholarship sight unseen by the president of the Rosenwald Fund simply on Dr. McCracken's recommendation. He happened to meet this gentleman at an educational conference in Chicago. He said, I'd like to meet with you and talk about this young Black woman who's just graduated from Ohio State. And the president said, well, I'm sorry, you know, I'm just so busy. The president could see that Dr. McCracken was quite deflated. And he said, I'll give you 5 minutes to tell me about this girl here and now. And Dr. McCracken said, I took a deep breath and proceeded to tell Ruby's entire story with 2 minutes to spare. On that alone, George Embry, the president of the Rosenwald Fund, said, we'll give her $1,200 to go abroad. And Dr. McCracken said, well, I really think she's not ready for Europe, but I think she would benefit by being in a good school. And Dr. Embry said, send her to Juilliard. The Rosenwald Fund will give her the $1,200 to go to Juilliard. Juilliard had already been set for the year. Dr. McCracken was able to set a special audition on October the 6th, the day before they were starting classes in 1930. Ruby was given a special audition before Frank Damrosch, who was the president of Juilliard at that time. And, of course, many people know Walter Damrosch was one of the great conductors of that era. And that was Frank Damrosch's brother. So Dr. Damrosch and a select group of people from Juilliard heard Ruby and admitted her. She started school the next day at Juilliard.
Ruby's arrival at Juilliard coincided with one of the most artistically creative periods in American history, known now as the Harlem Renaissance. Within a week of her arrival in the Big Apple, Ruby was singing with the prestigious Rosamond Johnson Choir on Broadway. Ruby would meet three people who would figure prominently in her life while studying at Juilliard. Arthur Kaplan, a young pianist who would accompany her many times, including in a performance for Eleanor Roosevelt at the White House. Another was Anne Wiggins Brown, who, along with Ruby, Todd Duncan, and John W. Bubbles, would be handpicked by George Gershwin to perform the roles of Bess, Serena, Porgy, and Sportin' Life in his groundbreaking opera, Porgy and Bess. Most important to her in her time at Juilliard was Lucia Dunham, who would call Ruby Elsie and Anne Brown her prize pupils. While Ruby studied at Juilliard with Lucia Dunham, she was also singing in the Rosamund Johnson Choir in the Broadway production of Brown Buddies and later Fast and Furious, which saw Ruby performing with some of the top black talent of the day and also afforded her her first solo on Broadway. She would soon make her first national radio appearance with Rosamund Johnson on a radio program called Parade of the States. The time would come when radio appearances were commonplace for Ruby, but right now, she was just wondering what she would do after graduation from Juilliard. Funding sources were hard to come by in the wake of the stock market crash a few years before, but Dr. Frank Damrosch, who had sat on the panel which originally auditioned and accepted Ruby into Juilliard, now came to Ruby with the news that she had received a faculty scholarship which would allow her to do postgraduate studies at Juilliard. In the summer of 1933, Rosamund Johnson was offered a contract to arrange and conduct a choir for the musical sequences in a film starring Paul Robeson. Needing an assistant music director, Johnson called upon Ruby to help him prepare for the film Emperor Jones. This film would have a huge impact on Ruby's career, hired by the producers to write the screenplay, DuBose Hayward. DuBose Hayward and producer Dudley Murphy still needed to fill the small role of Brutus Jones's girlfriend in Emperor Jones. As they watched Ruby, they realized she had both the sweetness and strength the part needed. All of a sudden, she was Paul Robeson's co-star. While the film is today considered a classic, it was neither the film nor her role in it that most profited Ruby. It was her friendship with DuBose Hayward. DuBose Hayward suggested to Gershwin he knew someone perfect for the small but important role of Clara. At the enthusiastic recommendation of both Hayward and Rosamund Johnson, Gershwin agreed to hear the 26-year-old Ruby sing. This is what Gershwin heard. Gershwin was stunned. Ruby had several more songs ready, but Gershwin had heard all he needed. George Gershwin had found not Clara, but Serena. Not long after, Gershwin himself introduced the stars of his new opera in this rare recording.
Now we have a song by Miss Ruby Elzey in the second act, scene one, called My Man Is Gone Now. I'm sorry, it's in scene two, act one.
Thank you.
September 30th, 1935, Porgy and Bess opened to a rousing ovation. Curtain calls lasted for nearly half an hour. Anne Brown.
Well, it was very exciting, and when we stood on the stage after the performance was finished, the applause from the audience was deafening. It was deafening.
Ruby had arrived. Critics called her performance of My Man's Gone Now a masterpiece of its kind. They said she distills heartbreak from this extraordinary piece of music. Porgy and Bess would propel Ruby onto the national stage with radio appearances on the Magic Key of RCA, the Mutual Broadcasting System, and two live all-Gershwin broadcasts from Lewisohn Stadium at City College in New York. She would wow critics with her New York recital, perform at the Apollo Theater, and even sign on for an engagement at the Kit Kat Club. One of the most notable radio appearances was on Town Hall Tonight with Fred Allen.
And now, may I present Miss Ruby Elsie. Miss Elsie, I deem it quite an honor to welcome you here to our frayed microphone this evening.
Thank you, Miss Allen.
I've never had the pleasure of hearing you sing until today. I missed you in Porgy and Bess, and then I intended to go to see the show, but I kept putting it off, and finally the Guild got up on its high horse and just said, either you come over here, or we're closing the show up. And I couldn't get over there, and they went ahead with the, you know how the Guild is. And that is why when the Guild and I pass these days, we never nod. If you ever see me passing the Guild, you will notice the Guild especially doesn't nod. But, Miss Elsie, do you want to tell us something about yourself? You were, besides Porgy and Bess, you were, you've also graduated from the Juilliard School, haven't you?
Yes, I did. I came up from, I came from Ohio State here. I finished Ohio State in 1930.
Uh-huh.
I went there on a scholarship given me by Dr. C.C. McCracken.
At Ohio State?
Uh-huh. And I went to Ohio State from Rust College. I worked my way through Rust College. If you ever would happen to come to my house, you'd notice I wouldn't eat on tablecloths, because that's what I did, wash tablecloths to get through Rust.
So now you're cured, huh?
Yeah, oilcloth.
You get... Well, I don't know. It'd be terrible to come back in later life as a spirit and come in your house with a tablecloth on, and there you are. You wouldn't pay any attention to me.
I'll start washing.
But you've also sung with Mr. Robeson, too, haven't you?
Well, I played opposite him in The Emperor Jones.
Emperor Jones here
picture.
In this country?
Picture, yes.
Oh, in the picture.
The picture.
Mr. Robeson's in Europe now, isn't
he?
I read about him occasionally, gadding about Russia in one place or another with his earmuffs on. And I also wanted to ask you, one of the boys told me that you this week are appearing at the Apollo Theater in Harlem. Is that right?
125th Street.
On 125th Street.
Right.
You have another show there tonight,
another
too?
Another show tonight.
Well, then we better just get going. What are you going to sing for us tonight?
Summertime from Porgy and Bess.
Summertime from Porgy and Bess. Thank you.
Porgy and Bess would be revived in the late 30s for a short run on the West Coast before extreme weather stranded the company in San Francisco, putting a halt to the planned tour and ruining the producer financially. Finally, in 1932, a third attempt to mount what would be a shortened and much less expensive production of Porgy and Bess and to take it on tour would succeed. Ruby Elsie would be cast in the role of Serena for all three productions. The first one, of course, launched her performing career. The third one would mark the untimely ending of it. Ruby began to feel irritable and moody during the tour, and her stamina was dropping. By the time the company reached Detroit, she was ready to see a doctor. Ruby had a benign uterine tumor which would need to be removed. Ruby was not willing to drop out of the tour, so she decided to postpone surgery until the show finished its run. The tour wrapped up in Denver, Saturday, June 19, 1943. Emma, Ruby's husband Jack, and Ruby set out for Detroit, where the operation could finally be performed, and Ruby hoped she would get her energy back. As they prepared to take her to the operating room the next morning, it was fitting that she sang. She vocalized a little bit, gave her mama a smile, and hopped up on the gurney to head to the operating room. 2 hours later, Ruby was gone. News of Ruby's death spread quickly in major newspapers across the country and in the entertainment industry publication known as Variety, reaching her Porgy and Bess castmates, her hometown, and friends across the country.
Oh, my dear mother, don't you weep when I'm gone.
Emma had notified the McCracken family immediately, but they were traveling and would not know of Ruby's death until after the funeral services had been held. It was a loss Dr. McCracken would never get over. In one publication, the editors wrote, "Her aspect of the race question was one of the sanest and most sincere we have ever known." In a gesture of respect that reflected that sentiment, Ruby Elzey was the first black person buried in the then whites-only central portion of Pontotoc City Cemetery, less than 50 yards from the front gate. At her funeral service at the McDonald Methodist Church in Pontotoc, blacks and whites alike filled the church, overflowing into the churchyard.
Don't you weep when I...
As it had been all of her life, Ruby Elzey was bringing people of both races together in harmony. Now in the church where she had first raised her incredible God-given voice in praise, Ruby Elzey had come home again.
Oh.